you're joining us in front of the telly. Like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, Angel. It's been so long, I've had to refine the groove.
I don't know if I have the groove, but yeah, same.
So how was your vacation?
It was good. It was rejuvenating. I am rejuvenated. The time maybe not was rejuvenating, but I needed the break. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been working a lot. I'm in a bunch of stuff on the side, and it's just, you know, time to kind of reconsider, you know, my priorities and everything. So trying to figure out a way to bring back the joy of doing the show and watching television and talking about it. And I think that I have gotten there because I have a lot of ideas and a lot of things in my head, and just kind of really got into the shows that I was watching for this, the start of season fucking three of In Front of the Telly.
Oh.
Can you believe that? You didn't know where I was going with that.
No, I didn't know what season you were like. Because we're doing years, yes.
Yes.
So we've done a full year, because it wasn't much of the first, and then it's been the full second, and then now we're starting.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to America's Next Top Model this. Yeah. We're not going to America's Next Top Model this, you know, mm-hmm. where we have, you know, multiple seasons within a year, but we kind of did do that.
Yeah. So what did you watch on your vacation? Anything that we can do a quick go over?
Yes and no. I watched.
All right.
I mean, you know, like, I kind of want to talk about all these things as well, but like,
well, we want to save some of it to do a deep dive.
Sure, sure, sure. We both watched on HBO Max a comedy from Comedy Central.
South Side.
Thank you. I finished a Black Lady sketch show.
Mm-hmm.
I did not get into the two shows that we were talking about watching at the end of season 2.
Oh yeah, I still haven't watched that. What was? Well, I know the one was like something like murder to hell or some kind of edgy title like that. I remember the poster, and I remember the girl who's the star.
Right.
And not... I remember us going, we should watch that. And I did not do that at all. What was the second show, though?
The Flight Attendant was the second show.
Still haven't done that one either.
No, nope. Not at all. The first show was I May Destroy You.
Yeah.
I May Destroy You was the first show. And, yeah. Did not get to watch any of those. No. You know what I did watch too much of? Leverage Redemption.
Yeah, didn't you watch that multiple times since we talked?
I've watched that so many times since we talked. They got a second season. I'm going to say, because of all the times that I watched it in the actual app with the fucking commercials.
Oof.
No, it was terrible.
No, you're a true fan, because you watch that show at all. On, like, I can't even imagine streaming anything on IMDb, right?
Right.
Yeah, like, I don't go to IMDb for streaming. So no. The fact that you watched that at all, mm-hmm. I mean, that just shows you're a fan.
Yeah, no. Dedication. I'm a true fan.
Literally, this show is so weird. If you turn it on, you're automatically a fan. Because you had to go to IMDb to find it. It's not like you accidentally touched on something that Netflix said you might like.
Right.
And then you got into it. It's like, yeah, I do like this though. You hit play on IMDb on anything, mm-hmm. you're a fan.
Mm-hmm. The only other thing that I've watched on IMDb, because I just had a huge hankering to watch it, was Warehouse 13.
Ah.
Yeah.
Is that what that is? Is that where that is?
That is where that is. So, like, I found Eureka not somewhere else, and I watched Eureka and Warehouse 13 at approximately the same time when they were running. You know, I watched it mm-hmm. live.
They were part of a block.
Yeah. And so I watched Eureka, you know, like, you know, marathon watched that. And when I got done, I was like, dang, I want to watch Warehouse 13. And then I found out the only place it was IMDb, and I tried to, like, figure out other ways. And then finally I was just like, well, fuck it. We'll watch it, commercials and all. But I hate it. And I, like, literally, please let me pay something so I don't have to watch the commercials. IMDb TV. I don't care that it's free. It's like, please do what Hulu did, where, you know, they were free and mm-hmm. you could watch stuff. But now you can pay to get rid of the commercials. Like, I just want you to do that. That's yeah. my, you know, 2022 dream is that IMDb lets me pay them money so I don't have to look at another fucking commercial.
I just want all these streaming services to get rid of the fucking cursor.
Yes. I mean,
I swear only Netflix is doing it.
I think I don't only Netflix else. Is doing it. Yeah, Hulu, like, we'll just HBO? Let that damn cursor, HBO, Disney, just let that damn cursor sit in the middle of your screen, because that's where, you know, and then if you don't move the cursor from, like, the play area, then you have a darkened screen with your timeline there.
Oh
the
my god!
Time.
When
so, oh, it's infuriating.
When it takes so long for it to go away, because I watch a lot of stuff. The problem is, Angel, is we watch a lot of stuff on from the web from our browser.
Yeah,
they do not give a fuck about fixing that.
No,
they are all about just the mobile app.
They need you to go to the apps. They want you to have Roku. They want you to have Fire Stick. They want you to have Apple TV. And they want you to watch from there. And it's just like, fuck you. Because
I work from home.
I work at home mm-hmm. for the majority of my work. And the one thing I hate the apps, because you cannot skip things. And it forces you
yes.
to... you know, have to click check in to that you're watching. It's just like, dang, I'm like streaming for 10 hours. I do not want to have to do this every 2 hours. I do not want to have to do this every 3 episodes. Like, please, like, give me the add-on in Chrome or, you know, Safari or whatever that lets mm-hmm. me stop, you know, I want to skip the beginning of it. Although I did kind of... Oh, no, I don't want to do the recap. I did kind of hate skipping the beginning when I was watching Cowboy Bebop, which, you know, I watched, because I love the opening song so much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But worth skipping because I want to get straight to the story, right? And I'm watching for so long that I want my 10 hours to count for something, you know. So, like, I want it all to be watchable show mm-hmm. so I can watch as much as I can. So yeah, I want the add-on, the what do they call these? You know, like ad blocker or whatever.
Extension.
I want the extension that lets me keep watching the show without ever having to grab my keyboard and click that I'm still watching.
I bet there is an extension for that on some of them. It's probably app site specific though,
because mm-hmm.
they're all written differently. But yeah, like yeah. get rid of the fucking cursor. Don't have the fucking controls on for 2 fucking minutes. Jesus. Oh.
Anyway.
But yeah.
We haven't even gotten into the how horrible the websites still are for watching shows.
I don't really fuck. We watch Paramount Plus usually together, so uh-huh. I don't really fuck with it. But right. Stephanie has been watching some shows on Paramount Plus because we mm-hmm. finally got Paramount Plus,
mm-hmm.
and like she hates the app.
Because it's CBS. CBS always, as CBS has from the beginning of streaming, had the worst streaming app in like for everything. It's just like. Like, literally, I'm not a big fan of you know, like, connecting things on Amazon Prime to watch stuff. But it's just, like literally the only way that I want to watch CBS shows. Paramount Plus is better than the old CBS app. But, mm-hmm. like, yeah, they're still terrible. And Disney is...
I can't remember which one does this, but I know there was one that, when I went to search... You didn't get the show. The results wasn't the show. It was the season of the show. I'm like, why are you... What? Like, give me the show, and then I will find the season. What the right. fuck?
Right.
And then... that's like giving me every episode. I don't want... Like, there's a tree here. Right. There's an org chart. And then...
There's an outline of the show, and I just want the whole thing, and then I'll go into the outline and find what I need to...
And I think it's HBO Plus, but I have to go back like 5 times just to get to the start of the season list. because it's like it makes the episode into different pages, and it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, Netflix, I don't even understand.
Netflix set out a map for this.
Yeah.
Just copy it.
Damn.
Do what they're doing.
Like, like, you don't try to remake the wheel. Try to take the wheel that's already made, and maybe you can make it better, and maybe you can't. But at least you know that it works. It's round. It's going to move your car. Like, fucking do that. But, yeah. Like, everybody's trying to remake the streaming
site. Some of them are, like, rounded squares. Ka-dunk.
They're doing the fucking Futurama where Fry remakes the wheel and it's an oval.
Yeah.
And he has to pull it. Like, no. We stop doing that. Like,
your content
fucking
is
oval,
what...
CBS.
Oh, good news, though, as far as HBO, I just found out that they have Babylon 5, and I have never watched Babylon 5.
Okay.
And, you know, everybody goes on about, depending on which one you like better, depends on which one stole from the other between Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine, so I'm super excited. I never got to catch that, obviously, when it was on, and after that, like, this is the, when it was over, this is before season sets was a thing.
Yeah.
Unless you want 25 VHS tapes, and I didn't. So, yeah, I've never seen Babylon 5, so I'm totally about to start that, like,
cool.
Tonight.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've seen Babylon 5 either, but
HBO.
It's got Bruce Boxleitner, so. I just want, so, speaking of Bruce Boxleitner,
of course.
I've literally been wanting Scarecrow and Mrs. King to come out on something. Like, I loved that show. Back in the day, I don't know if you ever saw this, but Bruce Boxleitner was a spy, and what was the name of the woman? She was at Charlie's Angels.
Scarecrow and Mrs. King? I mean, what?
Yeah, Scarecrow and Mrs. King. So Mrs. King was played by Kate Jackson, and she was a single mom, or I think she was divorced, but she was a single mom, and Bruce Boxleitner was an agent, like a spy, and they developed an unusual partnership because she had to help him do something. He, you know, started out by giving her a package when he was being pursued, and then she told her to give it to somebody. Yeah, and then that starts this whole thing. But she's got like two kids or whatever. It was so fun to me, you know, like that concept. And it's, you know, like, there's a part of me that's just like, I barely remember the show, but I just remember enjoying it so much. So every time I see Bruce Boxleitner's name, I always go, I wonder when they're going to ever stream Scarecrow and Mrs. King anywhere. And I'm going to be so fucking mad if it's on IMDb TV.
Where the true stands live.
Right. I mean, I will be watching, but I will be so mad.
Well, okay. We took a trip to Georgia, and so it was hard to, like, I was out of the loop on everything. Like,
how long was your trip?
2 weeks in whole, but it wasn't all in one place. So we went to Texas and stayed there for a couple days, and then we went to Florida and stayed there a day, and then we went to Georgia and stayed there a week. And it was like, while I was there, like, I was so out of the loop that, like, while I was in Georgia, like, no matter which part of the family I'm with, they're trying to challenge me on shit because, you know, on political and news shit. And I just was like, I'm on vacation, so I'm not keeping up with the news and stuff. And so they're like, what do you think about them breaking into Nordstrom's and, like, taking calculators? Like, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. And I don't care.
You need the Cliff Notes of news crime.
Yeah, like... I get, like, and I still haven't really, because this was, like, such a blip. Like, evidently some people coordinated a mass, like, a flash mob run on Nordstrom's in November. And we're, like, adding up what they took to the point, supposedly, this is according to, this is secondhand from, I'm sure, a Fox News report.
Mm-hmm.
They took calculators and they added up what they took enough to not be a felony.
Wait. So the flash mob of thieves grabbed a calculator, stole things, added them up as they were stealing,
rang themselves up,
and then walked away before they got to a felony amount.
Yeah, supposedly. And this goes into, like, the whole narrative of, like, rising crime rates.
And nobody stopped them? Like, literally.
They left before they could be stopped? I guess. I don't fucking know. It
was a like, really weird. Was it like the getaway thing. Driver, the getaway calculator? Like, it was coordinated really... with the walkie-talkies?
But it was supposed to feed into the narrative of rising crime. Like, this is happening everywhere.
Mm-hmm. You but know, it was just like one fucking Nordstrom's.
It was one account. One time this happened.
I think two things happened. Total, in total?
I was on vacation. I don't know.
And
it has nothing, like, in the overall scheme of the news that I consume, does not matter.
Right.
Because it wasn't a movement or whatever, like mm-hmm. a saying, a meta. It was just this one thing that happened, and I get confronted and challenged about it. So it was hard to keep up with, you know, it was definitely hard to watch shows. Because... even in the car, it's not fun to watch TV. Like, that's why we're behind on news stuff, is, like, I watch a lot of YouTube, and there were some times we would kill hours, because we drove the entire time. So there was times where we killed some hours with, like, some of our news programs
mm-hmm.
on the YouTubes, but, like, even that, it's way more satisfying to do more talking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, me and Stephanie, we'll talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. So... anyway, yeah, but it was hard. I caught up with some shows. You evidently watched one of them, and we should definitely do a deep dive. It's Dope Sick.
Yeah, so I did watch Dope Sick all the way through, mm-hmm. and let me tell you my surprise.
Did you not think you were going to make
it? The story was enthralling. I did not think I was going to make it. I was just like, this is too serious. This is too close to what's going on in the real world. This is... you know, devastating, like, seeing this crisis because, like, you know, like, we're seeing it here in Alaska. We're seeing it, like, all over the country. You know, we know people that, you know, have been caught up in it. I mean, like, literally, for me, like, I have OxyContin for my back. You know, it's just like, this is a thing that you worry about in general. You know, like literally worrying about it for myself mm-hmm. and worrying about, you know, its effectiveness for me, but also knowing like what it actually is and was, you know, for, you know, from that period of time when it was dangerous, when nobody thought that it, when only a few people thought that it was, right? So I was just like, there's no way I'm going to enjoy watching this, you know? It was enjoyable. It was a well-told story. It, you know, like, hit close to home. It was emotional without being fraught with emotion. You know, I mean, like, it wasn't, like, it didn't, you know, like, I cried at parts. But
Michael
Keaton's
performance and character.
It was so good.
I
didn't spend the
character.
Whole time crying. You
I
know?
Hate seeing character. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I hate seeing character because he's a person, but still. Right. It's still a show. And, like, he wanted to go to, like, the mountains and like give people free healthcare and shit. And the next thing, and he's like an awesome doctor visiting people at their homes. And then he gets fucking hooked on the shit and just
yeah.
does a lot of damage that then he has to like, feels like he has to make up for. Like,
yeah.
And it really reminded me people, I've heard a couple people talk shit about this movie, but, so not only did Keaton start off as a stand up, he didn't start doing dramatic roles until this one movie called Clean and Sober, which is about the same thing, addiction and recovery. And I got real big, like, Clean and Sober vibes. Again, talk about stuff you can't... I wanted to go back and watch it, but, like, you can't find it on streaming right now.
Oh, okay.
But if you
ever get the
chance... I was
going to say, wait, let me guess, IMDb TV.
I don't know. To be fair, I don't think the sites I go to find out where things are is going to even bring up IMDb.
Is it really streaming? Like, really, so a lot of times when you see stuff about IMDb TV, they include it as part of Amazon. Mm. So it's, like, on Amazon because IMDb TV is connected. And so you go to Amazon and then you find out, oh, it's fucking IMDb TV. And so, yeah, you have to deal with it. But anyway.
Well, if you ever get a chance to catch Clean Sober, I would highly recommend it. It's very good. Very good movie. And especially if you like Dope Sick and was affected by his performance. I mean, like, really good.
Yeah.
But I interrupted you. Sorry.
Well, I mean, all I was saying was that I didn't expect to like it, and I really enjoyed it.
I was like laughing at it at first because like I knew what it was doing. It was propaganda. It's propaganda.
Sure,
propaganda does not need to be a bad word.
Yeah,
we understand that.
Yeah,
but it was like how you can tell when you're watching propaganda is, and then they drop little factoids in the middle of normal conversations, or it's just the way the exposition's laid out. Mm-hmm. It's very silly. It's not the way real life conversations would go.
Yeah.
Like, well, hey, can you pass some mustard? And did you know that 900 people a day die of opioid overdoses? What? It was just a little. It was
900.
That's a cartoonish way, and a drastically small number. A cartoonish way of saying it, but that is sort of how it was. And so I was like, "Oh my god!" I even made a comment in our Facebook group, which when we are on these off times, people can join and hang out and talk about stuff with us in between episodes, and give us suggestions, because I also got a suggestion from there of something I just got through watching tonight. But anyway. I was like, this is like good propaganda, like propaganda I like, but it's so silly at times.
Right.
And there were parts of the story I was like, there, it was like components to the story that were just to make the drama more appealing,
right,
but had nothing to do with anything. Why did I have to go through Rosario Dawson's marriage? That had nothing to do with anything. I was waiting. There's like one moment where it's like, don't you know how your investigation's hurting me?
Yeah.
And then she doesn't do anything. Like, that's about as much as it had to do with anything. And right. It didn't. So I'm just like, what are you doing? So it's like, obviously you're trying to make this show more palpable and fun. Like, that's the spoonful of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
To get the medicine to go down of like, oh, this guy really was a supervillain. That was another thing, too. He's like, fuck, what's the name of the family?
Sackler.
Arthur Sackler. Is it not? No, Arthur's the uncle. The main Sackler is looking at a literal picture of a globe and like talking about his expansions. And so he just looked like Dr. Doom going, I'm going to take over the world. And it was just so silly. This is a second generation of douchebags. Arthur Sackler was the main patriarch of the family that got them the money to begin with to start this shit. But it was just silly at times. And while you're looking that up, just going to continue a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
The other thing I didn't like about it, the overall thing is like, even though I found
Richard things, Sackler, sorry.
Richard Sackler. Dick. So I did end up liking the show as a whole. It's still, you know, I still have the opinion that it was obvious propaganda and, and stuff was injected, like filler was injected to make it more palpable. Right. Performances were great. Story is good and it should be known. And it shows a lot of corporate capture and regulatory capture and how, and the revolving door and how that works and stuff. But one thing I hated that they did is they did the same thing fucking Dr. Death did in those fucking time jumps.
I know, the time jumps. I mean, like, even before you said that, I was just like, what the fuck? I'm confused by it because it was, you know, like, you start at the date where your last scene was, and then they move forward or backwards depending on that, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, wait, what the fuck? Did we see the divorce before we saw the whole marriage thing come together? Like, why would you do that to us? Like, we now know that. I mean, it was just like, it just kind of drove me crazy that they did that back and forth, you know?
With a story like that, too. That has these interconnected lines and stuff.
Yeah, it was so confusing because it's just like, wait, when did they come to the, like, when did they hang out with Rosario Dawson to tell her that they were doing this? Wait, was she with the, what is it? Not diversity. What's the name of the...
DEA.
Yeah, she's with the DEA, but she was an agent. And
then
she moved to...
there was a... I don't remember.
So I'm going to call it diversity right now. Yeah. Like, that's not what it was.
That's absolutely not...
That's not what it was called.
It's something close to that. It's like an itty. City. S-I-T-Y is definitely at the end, but
diversion?
No, I don't know. Anyway... I get you.
Yes.
We're all with you.
We all know. But yeah, so she moves to this new group, but it's just like, wait, when they first meet with her, was she just DEA and not with this? other group that they promoted her to? Like, I just couldn't remember, like the time just fucked with me in the storytelling.
It's one thing if you have... I don't think it helped the storytelling. Don't think it made it more confusing.
Made it worse.
And this is already a story that has layers and procedures and stuff like that. And then secondly, okay, you want to do flashbacks. We'll do an end point and a start point. But this was like five different time periods that they kept jumping between for no fucking reason.
No reason.
And I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? Like,
yeah. Oh. It's just like... Like, give us dates in the progression, right? So, you know, we start in 98. Where do we start? Do you remember?
No, I do not. I know. Okay. All I know is it was a lot of time during the Bush administration.
Yeah. So, it definitely was between 98 and 2019, but I don't remember if it started prior to 98 or not.
I don't think it went to 2019.
It did go to 2019.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because that's when the final case
went. Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't... Oh, did you hear? So, and for anybody... Yeah, so then after that, which happens after the show, a judge gives them a bullshit bankruptcy shield that says, okay, everybody stop suing the Sacklers. They're claiming bankruptcy, but thank God another judge said, nope, fuck that shit. Yoink it. Yoink! Good. Have at it, people.
Yeah.
But Dope Sick was good. Great performances.
Mm-hmm. I think, so, like, there's a part of me that wants to say the best part of the, you know, like, the storytelling was the small town community that Michael Keaton was a part of and, you know, all the people that he affected, you know, because he believed.
Yeah, he had, like, a fucking ring.
Yeah.
He had, like, a sidekick at one point.
Right? That older guy that got to be able to bowl.
Yeah,
and I love the look on his face when he revealed that he was taking 400 milligrams a day, and it's just like, oh my god, that's so much. That's so, like when they introduced the 160 milligram pill, and you realize that that's a lot of fucking Oxycontin, and he was like 400 milligrams. It was like, oh my god, you're never gonna get out of this, you know, and watching the struggle and the downfall of Betsy.
Yeah, the minor chick.
Yeah, the minor chick. Betsy Malum. And then, like, every time I saw her mom after that, going for, you know, like, going after the Sacklers and being part of the group that was, you know, protesting them and all of that stuff. Like, I just wanted to cry because I, you know, like, it's just, like, how she is feeling that death every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know... especially seeing how much the Sacklers profited from something that, like, literally took her child's life away.
And that's just one story. I watched a documentary on the opioid crisis a while back, and there was this one story of this, like, upper to mid-level, middle-class family, and the wife had gotten stubbed her toe or sprained her ankle or whatever, went to the hospital, got put on Oxy, and then the next thing you know, they're divorced and she's living on the streets trying to score heroin, because that's like the reason why they go from Oxy to heroin is because, like, that's the cheapest way to get what you need. And now what's worse, I mean, this isn't part of that story because this is a new development. Now what's worse is people are putting fentanyl in everything. And while, no, you don't touch it and overdose like the fucking cops are trying to tell you, you can die from injecting it like that just one time. And so at the end of the stuff is even more lethal, and it's all just corralling people into that. But, you know, like I said, it's a little silly at times when you're watching it as a pure story, because you know what they're doing. There's an obvious thing there's an obvious message they're trying to give you, and they're trying to give you some information, even though in a very scattered way. Fuck, I started with a point and I lost it in the middle.
Yeah, that is... I feel like this is going to be the core of our show from now on, because we're both tired. It's the end of the day. You know, we've done, you know, like a full day's of work. I work 10 hours and then come and do this. So, you know, I'm going to lose my train of thought often.
Dope Sick is good. I would definitely suggest it. Even I think that's the main crux is what I'm saying. The performances are great. It is a good story. It's a story that people do need to know about. There's a lot of parts to it that people need to know about.
Right.
The regulatory capture, how the movements can get easily co-opted. When the people, the activists went and met with, what's the company? Purdue Pharma,
yeah.
Met with the Purdue people. They're like, well, we could use that money. When they were getting talked to about a payoff, it took the nun to be like, nah, fuck them. Yeah. you can do what you want, but I ain't shutting the fuck up. So you go, whatever. Like, I can't stop you from taking that money, but that ain't, nah.
And but so, the second like, you do, I'm out.
Yeah, and peace. So like...
Peace.
And I'm sure that happens, and we see it happen with so many different activist groups and stuff like that. I mean, like... From my understanding, that's sort of a huge narrative of the Obama administration. He sort of took these activists, pacified them, and then did what the fuck he was wanted to do anyway.
Right.
And so, like, that happens a lot with these movements. And seeing that, like, I think the best thing they did was just show where all the tendrils go.
Yeah.
And how all the tendrils of this one issue, of this one decision by this one billionaire can affect so many different people.
Right. And how insidious it was. Yes. Because it's, you know, like, we have so much money, we can offer this money to our FDA person to give this data. We can give this chart. Like the biggest thing for me was the data analysis. I mean, like, I don't know why this was so interesting, but when she was talking about that chart where it seems to show that, you know, like, the opioid of OxyContin did not raise your, you know, levels or whatever. Like, I don't know what the fuck they were talking about, but it was just, like, looking at the chart and how the data was portrayed, and then she showed how, like, the lower half was elongated, but the upper half was shortened. So that it didn't show, like, the up and down that every opioid does when it's in your system. And then she was like, there's no, you know, basically there's no fucking way the FDA could accept it, see this and accept it as an accurate, you know,
statistic. It wouldn't have passed the seventh grade science fair.
Right.
I mean, it's literally like, when you see the, like, X axis, you'll go to 10. 20 and 30, and it'll be the same amount of space in between those numbers. Then you get to 50, and all of a sudden it's half.
Yeah.
And
it's
60.
Like 50 to 5,000, like, yeah, like in the same space as 1 through 30. You know? Yeah. And so it's like it's hiding data. And if you're not a data analyst, you don't know that it's doing that, right? But like you work in a field that is full of data analysts. So there's no way this chart can get by somebody at the with the caliber of the FDA that's, you know, trained to look at this kind of information. So it's just like, here is proof that you paid somebody off to get this, let this go through.
Well,
go ahead.
They're incentivized not to see that stuff because that goes to the revolving door stuff because these people were promised. It doesn't have to be a bag of cash. It can be a promise to access to that bag of cash later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the revolving door happens. There was even a senator, I can't remember his name, but he like gave a vote that did away with a regulation for pharmaceutical companies and then literally quit the next day and went to work for them.
Yeah.
And like, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
There's no crime that's been broken.
Mm-mm.
And that's why, you know, we talk a lot about systems and stuff. And even with this case, when you hear the word insidious, like usually it is. I had an argument with one of my liberal friends in Georgia. And, he got real upset when I used the term war criminal with Obama.
Yeah.
I called Obama a war criminal, and then I had to like read the definition for him to understand I wasn't just raising rhetoric. And then so his retort was like, well, Bernie would have been a war criminal. I'm like,
yeah.
And if he committed a war crime, yes.
But I mean, like, if he was president of the United States, he would have to be a war criminal because there's no fucking way that you can be the president of the United States and not participate in the wartime activities that we're already part of and not come out of the 4 years as a war criminal in some capacity.
Biden became a war criminal. Was like, what, when did that drone hit the kids and the NGO guy? Like, and so not at one point did he go, like, if everyone gets in this car and it keeps running over babies, you don't then redetermine if baby killing is an okay thing. You go, maybe there's something wrong with the fucking car.
Yeah.
The system. Yeah. And so, like, not at any point does he question that system. And so, like, that's one of the differences is between a leftist and a liberal. It's like we're more structure, superstructure, systems, stuff like that. Whereas they're like, who's in charge? Like, that's going to make a fucking difference.
Right.
But, so, build up for a point.
Okay. Yeah, you're calling Obama a war criminal in front of the entire world. Let's get to that point.
Thanks, Obama. There are systems that can create this distance between a decision that a CEO makes to the person on the street whose life is devastated by those simple decisions. Mm-hmm. And there are people who will, and usually liberals, and I mean the big conservative and liberal liberals.
Yeah.
Who will justify or ignore or try to obfuscate the responsibility of those decisions and that harm
right.
done to that person on the lower level. And they'll say it's because it's the system. That's when they'll focus on the system, when they want to obfuscate or distract from a problem. Okay, that's one thing. I'm not even saying that's right, but that's a thing that we see people bring up a lot.
Right.
But with this motherfucker, with Richard Sackler, like, he literally said, no, like, can we kill more people?
Yeah.
Or can I make more money? Well, sir, this is like hurting a lot of people. I don't give a fuck. How do I mean, the study that they kept repeating over and over again was from a guy who said something in an editorial write-in page in a journal, and he didn't even know his shit was being used. He was just talking shit.
It was a fucking opinion piece that was 5 lines long,
mm-hmm.
bringing up data that he did in a closed setting.
Yep. With 12 people? Yeah.
No, it was thousands of people, okay. But it was a hospital setting and it was closed, you know, so they were mm-hmm. monitored and, you know, everything was kept track of. And yeah, he didn't even know that they had turned his opinion letter to the editor mm-hmm. into a fucking study.
Yep. Like a couple paragraphs long.
It wasn't even a couple paragraphs long. It was one paragraph, 5 sentences.
There we go. I can't remember. You saw it more recently.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, so, I mean, again, and so it just goes to just how insidious is a great word for it, because it's just these were predetermined decisions made. And people were given evidence of, like, hey, bringing up Obama, and the thing that I would say, it was brought to his attention, hey, we're only killing 1 out of 10 targets, the rest are civilians. And he was like, keep going. Yeah. FISA courts, keep using the drone that's not working. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And then it also showed you how, you know, you've got the state level federal justice system in Virginia who wants to go after these people,
mm-hmm. but oh then there's
people at the top of that guy who you think at first, like, he looks a little slimy, he's gonna turn. No, he's like, he's white knighting it. And then the people above him are like, no, we don't need to do this. Right. And he had to say, no, fuck you,
right.
to keep it going. And he still got fucked in the end, even though he was completely right.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, again, talk about how fucked our system is.
Yeah.
When it takes people to go against their incentives to do the right thing, and mm-hmm. even they are still crushed, even after they're proven right.
Yeah.
Because it was the Bush administration, after they made the first indictments, that started cleaning house and just getting rid of motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm.
And again, and, you know, Giuliani's in there.
Ugh.
No, the grossest part was when Rosario Dawson's character is like, oh, Mr. Giuliani, I'm such a big fan.
Yeah.
But that it was also satisfying seeing her go, this motherfucker.
Yeah. Okay, so let me tell you that when I say that I connected to Rosario Dawson on so many levels, like, I fucking connected to Rosario Dawson on so many levels. It's just like, I don't know how to back down and not be the person that's ready to go to war, right? So it's just like, if something's wrong and I feel like I need to deal with it, take care of it, whatever, I don't want to send somebody else in. I don't think that this is the time to fucking be polite and a straight white guy standing up in front of everybody saying the thing that I don't want to say. You know, like, this is a fucking war, and I'm the person that's going to lead the charge, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when she showed up, like, they told her, don't come to this meeting. And then she showed up and was just, like, shaking hands and shit. I was like, yes, my girl. And so, like, I was like, I feel her on all the levels. Because, like, that's my anger level. That's my, you know, like, all the levels. Getting in people's faces. Like, I don't always want to be that person, but somehow I always am that person.
Well, again, it just shows you how at every turn, if another person was in that position, that it would have stopped. If there was a more pliable Virginia state attorney, mm-hmm. he just would have stopped. If there were if a Rosario Dawson had been someone who was just looking to get up the ladder, it would have stopped.
Yeah.
Which would have not getting them have gotten the information later. So it's like, again, it's like when there's also something to be said when a system requires that many times for a good person to be there to work against all the things around them that are pushing them in one direction.
Yeah.
Like, that's a failed system. That's a bad system. That's not how it should work.
Yeah.
Because them getting through this case, what that shows you is this was not the system working.
Yeah.
Because the system is putting in the incentives. So if the incentives are saying to stop this investigation, mm-hmm. to go work for the people you're supposed to regulating, mm-hmm. if the incentives are pushing in that in the Sackler's direction, mm-hmm. and it takes people to work against that system mm-hmm. that they're also a part of, that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. You know who are the only people that are surprised by this? White people. The system has been against, like, mm-hmm. people of color, women, gay people for decades, like centuries. Like, in a system that is upheld by white supremacy, this system is working exactly the way it should, and everyone, their job in order to have an equitable... To be equitable has to fight the system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the facts of life in what we now know is our world. You know, you think that because they prevail to a certain extent that the system is working, but like, look how hard they had to work just to get. I mean, like. Even if that's the highest monetary, you know, fine that a pharmaceutical company had to pay for, you know, their wrongdoing and, you know, whatever. Like, they still didn't get to indict these guys. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the guys they were going to indict are even the two lower level.
Yeah.
You know, to be the true, you know, they're not the true villains. They're the henchmen of the villains, you know. And upper level or not, they weren't the family that drove this epidemic, right?
No. The fact that Richard Sackler is not vulnerable for criminal prosecution for explicitly trying to make money off of addiction and therefore suffering.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way they built the chronic pain, like I like how they went into that, because again, I liked how they hit all these different tendrils, because that's just this story.
Right.
There's the oil companies. There was the tobacco companies.
Oh my God.
They will create like foundations that are all about, you know, like, we love baby killing cars.
William Morris created almost every anti-smoking campaign that exists.
Yes. Philip Morris.
Yeah, Philip Morris, thank you.
Yeah, like it's I like how they
William
how, like,
Morris they is an agency.
Yes.
Okay.
No, and this is like, and again, like, I it really gets on my nerves when, and it's usually conservative narrative or libertarian narrative, same thing, mm-hmm. whatever, that, government can be corrupted, and that's why government's bad. And it's like, mm-hmm. but never do I see them get mad at the corporation who corrupted the government. like you can't just be corrupted. It's not like just going to fucking happen. Like, what are you talking about? And so, like... it takes, there's a lot of premises there that it's still money. It's capitalism. Yeah. That's the corruption. You can have a government without capitalism, and yes, there can still be corruption because it's, you know, resources or whatever, but I'm just saying, like, they always want to blame the one side but never the other.
Right.
I mean, maybe they think it's implicit. Well, of course I don't like it when the corporation corrupts the government, but their answer to that is, well, we'll just get rid of the government. It's like, oh, so then the corrupting corporation just gets to do whatever they want now? Like, what? Right. What? And then there's also inter-corporate, like, they're like, get rid of the public sector and be corrupted. I'm like, there's inter-corruption in the private sector too. Like,
yeah.
It's, I mean, I know that that's just the bullshit reasoning to sell to dummies, but, like, it's just so frustrating.
It's so frustrating. I mean, like, so my job is in the public sector, and privatization, or, you know, bringing public sector jobs to the private sector, happens, like, it's a huge conversation, especially when you have, like, a Republican governor or whatever, right? And so then they
public-private partnerships.
Yeah. So then they try to do, you know, shit to, you know, make the public part terrible. Like, think about the DMV. And so, like, the DMV, you know, the state suddenly has rules about, like, how you can access a DMV and how you can, you know, right? And so that it, in a way that slows it down. But then there are private companies where, you know, like, oh, I've had to make an appointment. And now if I look at the calendar, I can't make an appointment for 2 weeks to go into the DMV, right? But I can go into this privately owned DMV adjacent company and be seen to immediately. And so then you think, oh, well, the DMV, you know, like, the state system sucks and the private company is doing better. But it's because we have, you know, Republican governors, sometimes even liberal governors, yes, you know, that claim to be Democrats, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, if we take the term liberal and understand that it applies to the Republican and Democratic thought, then, you know, like, you'll understand what I'm saying. But basically, you take, you know, a governor that is against public resources and for privatization just because of how much money they can make from it. And, you know, then they implement rules and systems in the public sector that makes it hard for them to do the job that they're supposed to do. So people then see, well, the private companies will do better. But then once it becomes private, then you, like, I don't know if you still follow the news in Macon or whatever, but I think they privatized the trash pickup. Oh, and God. Like, all I've heard is complaints from, you know, what's going on, right? And so, you know, it's just like, oh, they didn't pick up my garbage on this day. Oh, da, 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 right? And so, you know, I don't know. I'm not in Macon. I'm in you know, Juneau, Alaska. Mm-hmm. But, like, I see it, and it's just like, we didn't have this many problems when, you know, it was just trash authority pickup, you know.
When it was part municipal.
Yeah, exactly. And so, it's just interesting to see, like, people, when someone makes the system worse just so they can make more money later, that still disenfranchises the public and, you know, like, the work that needs to be done for, you know, the public. So it kind of sucks that our systems are set up to make things worse for us and make money for very few people.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the neoliberal. I mean, talk about liberal. Yes. To our listeners, liberal thought is conservative and liberal. Conservative is more the offshoot of the liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Liberal democracies, and then you have things that are farther left to that, and that's what we are. But that's that public-private shit, that's straight up, like, literally neoliberal
mm-hmm.
policies, where you, the quickest definition is socialize the, privatize the gains and socialize the losses.
Yeah.
And so whatever externalities they can put on the public, they will, and then they'll take the private. And that's how a lot of our government's set up to do.
Yeah.
And it's just an extension of all the worst parts of liberalism. Yeah, no, I talking to a family member who works at the base in the Air Force base. Mm-hmm. First, and this is a Republican. This is a Christian conservative, and so they don't like any of that Bernie Sanders socialism shit.
Not a damn one.
Yeah, and we need to hold people accountable, but not billionaires.
Well, yeah, the billionaires are smart because they figured out a way to make money. Because that's where intelligence lies in making and figuring out how to make money.
He would go on and on about how he was working there at the beginning of the Bush administration. And so so the Warner Robins Air Force Base is basically a garage to fix certain airplanes. Mm-hmm. And so they kept a warehouse and of inventory of parts. And some of the parts aren't made anymore because not all of these aircraft are new.
Right.
But the Bush administration, which under Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, was actually on a huge privatizing, had a huge privatizing scheme even before 9/11 happened. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was, we're going to get rid of all that inventory because we don't want to pay to hold that inventory. Mm-hmm. Well, now when they need a part, where are they going to get it from? We're going to get it from this private company, which ups the sales for the military contractors. Mm-hmm. And specifically, well, we don't have this part that they don't make anymore. Oh, well, now we're going to pay these machinists to create this part that we already had a second ago, but we threw away in the trash because we were trying to cut the costs. So now we got to pay for a new part to get customized and made specifically for us. And again, when I bring up military contracts or why wars happen, I get this look of like, what are you talking about?
Right.
And even when they're telling the story, again, they're going on and government can't do anything. And I'm like, and this happened in when? What year? Well, 2002. Okay, who was in charge? So it's like
you can't walk people. This is like a literally you can't make a horse drink.
No.
What is it? Drink a
horse. You lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. They don't want to drink. And look, again, at the end of the day, I also know they're programmed not to. I mean, these motherfuckers the whole time I was down there, and even still on Facebook, they're just they're repeating literal Reagan campaign slogans.
Yeah.
And it's like, guys, like, does your shit not change? Like, we tried that. It sucks.
Me and my husband, we were talking about how, you know, like, Biden's administration is like the third iteration of Reagan's administration. Yeah. The 13th iteration. I don't know how many presidents have happened since Reagan. I don't want to do the math or whatever. No. I mean, I'm sure I could count it out, but like, this is just every single president has been an extension of Reagan's time in office. And it sucks.
Yeah. And it's proven, I mean, like, I don't know how many times it's proven to be a failure and they don't give a shit. And again, I think sometimes that...
Nah, we're literally not talking about TV.
We
right
aren't. Don't say corruption. It was just organic.
I know. I mean, I think it's hard to talk about the topics that Dope Sick brings up without going into our, you know, left-leaning talking points against the liberal world that we live in. It's just hard to, it's almost impossible for both of us not to kind of bring those two worlds together, right?
Well, because
our
it deals
love
with
of television and our left-leaning ideologies.
It deals with government work, and we think government can do work. I do. I think, and I just don't want people, it just gets in my, I see when people will see what they want to see sometimes, so they see the corruption, and they go, it can't work. And it's like, hold on. No, it can. When people get the fuck out of the way. There's more nuance to that. I'm just trying to give a quick.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get it. And like, not even both of us, we don't agree in our left-leaningness, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's fine. And there are people who are listening who, you know,
have
are
their own
liberal.
Baggage.
And, well, or baggage or thoughts. And, you know, like, we're not trying to say your thoughts are wrong and our thoughts are right. We're just telling you how we believe. And that informs how we view,
yes,
you know, our worldview and our concepts and criticisms of the shows that we watch, because we can see the propaganda, you know, we can see, you know, what is trying to be said, you know, when a liberal take is happening in a TV show, we see that. When,
oh, yes.
You know, they're trying to be leftist, we see that. When it is a terrible take, we see that, you know, or we're learning to pay more attention to it. You know, like, I still fall for a lot of propaganda. And so, you know, we keep that in mind as we're watching stuff. And sometimes we get off, you know, go off on our rants or whatever, but we know that there's a lot of thoughts that people have about stuff. And I think that bringing them all to the table is worth, it makes it worth talking about.
Yeah. And we don't think that, to be fair, I think we both agree that our perspectives don't get brought to the table often. It's more of a liberal perspective. And so when I see something that's explicitly liberal, I'm definitely going to bring it up and challenge it, because I think it's so easy to fall into those habits and propaganda. And not
examine further.
Yeah. Like I said, the systems of people and how those things could be questioned. Because I feel like, at least from my radicalization, that a lot of the answers that I have now were just right the fuck there. But it was always just held behind this veil of, like, that's too far.
Yeah. Exactly. It is, you know, like, oh, it's a titch too far.
And so if I can help get someone past that veil a little bit, then I feel good. And a lot of the way that we're programmed has a lot to do with the television stuff. And we've talked about that before, mm-hmm. about how, like, New York people are rude. How do you know that? You've never been to fucking New York? Right. TV tells me to. So again, mm-hmm. again, if you're told how awesome Obama is, I'm going to come in and tell you, like, I'm going to piss on that parade for a second just so you can get that perspective. But
anyway. You're going for people's juggler, Jacob, you're going for their juggler and they are not happy about it. But Dope Sick is definitely TV worth viewing.
Yes. And showing to others.
Yeah. And I mean, even if you don't agree with our line of thinking about this show, even if you get something else from it, like, you will literally get something from this, watching this.
Yeah, it's informative. That's what propaganda is.
And
or can be.
And so, like, it's funny because the very first episode of Leverage Redemption mm-hmm. deals with an opioid, you know, a Sackler-esque family. They did not name the Sacklers in specific, but this is, you know, like, a man that made his money, a family that made their money off the opioid crisis and cared a lot about being in art museums and things like that. And so, like, I won't say it was a fun take on this, you know, concept, mm-hmm. but I loved that what the writers wanted to do was take on the corruption that we find in real life from this family. And there wasn't a lot that was very different from the information that you got from the Sackler family in Dope Sick to this imaginary opioid family in Leverage Redemption. So, you know, I kind of, you know, it just kind of made me appreciate that even if no one else likes my show, that my media is, you know, fulfilling for me and still informative in this similar way. So,
yeah, I think we talked about this before, too, about how when we were talking about Loki mm-hmm. and how there was a part in that where all the rich people got on the planet ending arc to get away. And how they made a comment about how the elites were able to do that, but the poor were left behind. And it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, but this is said by fucking Disney. So, something I've been thinking about and something I was thinking about a lot during our break, especially after I watched Squid Game and stuff, is that we're trying to get less political, but I'm about to run right the fuck back into it. But it has a lot more to do with television.
You're, like, literally running into politics.
But it has a lot more to do with television. I think one of the things that we have to be... I think it's nice to see rich people being more demonized. Mm-hmm. I'm always down for that. But at the same time, I've noticed that the capitalism, the system... you just stay away from the C word. Capitalists get crazy when you define it. So I'm just gonna say the system. They do.
Do they? Are they sensitive?
Yeah. No.
I know.
Oh, yes. Sorry. They're very, yes. Mm-hmm, yes, they're insecure. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, I think, let me get to my fucking point. Jesus. They, I think the system can take all the criticism we could lob at it. I think
agreed.
It's a, I think, and I think that's the problem. I think, you know, Squid Game was a very harsh critique on capitalism. And like my married to a banker sister-in-law understood that, mm-hmm, unprompted, mm-hmm, used those words. And so like what, and so I was like, oh wow, she gets it. And I'm like, oh
wow, she and that, gets it.
That doesn't do anything. That doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was like, I saw Richard Wolf tweet, mm-hmm, say something about how capitalism doesn't care if you criticize it; it cares when you show an alternative.
Yeah.
And I think that's the subversion, that's the counterculture that I want to see more of.
But you're never going to see that in popular media or even unpopular media. Like, it's very hard. I don't know if you watched Don't Look Up.
Oh, I did.
And it was very dissatisfying.
Yes.
And I didn't understand quite why until I read Don't Look Hard, which was an article written by...
I was really looking forward to it. I posted about that in the group over and over. I was like, this would be good. David Sirota. First off, found out he just basically helped come up with the premise, and that's why Adam McKay gave him the writing credit. He wasn't even aware when they started shooting. So.
So isn't the guy that did Don't Look Up going to remake...
Adam McKay.
Parasite?
Yes.
Do the American version of Parasite?
Yes, with Ben Affleck, last I heard.
Yeah. So the Don't Look Hard. So I recognize the elements that made the movie unsatisfying to me, mm-hmm, but I couldn't name it until I read this article. So I was reading this article called Don't Look Hard by Dr. Hassan Ali, and he said that the art of the enemy only serves the enemy. So, like, even if we could find a way to truly create criticism of our system, the only people that would take, like, it would not get broad appeal, because the capitalist system, the insidious system that benefits corporations to the detriment of people, you know, the everything that speaks to American exceptionalism, when, you know, like, there's wide swath of communities outside of America that could do the exact same thing that we do or better, but better, any of that, none of that would be able to accommodate the true criticism of its system. You know, like, so you say capitalism can accept the criticism, right? Mm-hmm. They just can't accept the replacement. And that's the next step. How do you show the replacement of capitalism? Not just a criticism of what we're looking at, because we all see, you know, like, we can see that these things are terrible. These systems are corrupt. We know that. You know, you don't have to keep showing us movies. We can, you know, we know what to ignore if we don't want to see the insistent reminder that we live in a corrupt system, you know, so we can ignore it. You know, we watch Fox News that tells us that everything that is, you know, currently happening is fine. Anything upholding white supremacy is fine, and ignore all these other things because they're terrible, you know, and all they're doing is criticizing a system we already know is terrible. And nothing, I find that it will be very hard to get something that shows the replacement of our system, mm-hmm, to be widely viewed by anyone else. Like, can you think of any art, any, you know, music, anything like that, that shows like a true better way than what we're doing now that's part of popular media? I don't think that popular media can accommodate that, because that would not make money. That would not get them what they want. Don't Look Up gave people money. even though it's...
Oh, Don't Look Up is not...
Sure, sure.
It's a critique of the system, but it's not... It's yeah.
It's not a true critique of the system, because there's still American exceptionalism. They try to depoliticize science. Yeah. I mean, like, there's so many things in that movie that isn't...
I don't...
Yeah, anyway, we're not talking
but
about
that's,
that one.
But that's critique that we've already agreed that critique is not gonna do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
That capitalism will put a t-shirt that says your money is fake. Right. Sell it.
Bitcoin is fake. Still buy it.
So, no, we agree on that. I don't fully... I want to read... I'm gonna read the article.
Yeah.
But I don't... I think there are two things at play that make me disagree with that as a definitive statement. And that is, there are degrees of what we're talking about. And popular is subjective.
So
there are degrees there as well.
Yeah,
I do think there are movies with societies that are doing things in a better way than capitalism that are in broadly appealed. They are broadly consumed media. Now these ideas might not be taken seriously, which is why I think they get passed. But if what you were saying was a definitive true statement, then we would have to. It just seems to me my answer to that is in. We can't hope for media to do anything in our direction and help us bring people to our direction. And that's why I say it's degrees. So it's like, yeah, I don't need a movie called Commie the Commie, Anarchism, Socialism, the movie. But, you know, you do have... And again, I know Star Trek's not a socialist revolution. But you know what? There's a famous fucking blip where he says we don't use fucking money anymore. And consuming resources, that's in there. And then that gets placed in the seed of a little 8-year-old Jacob. And then later on, he's like, yeah, even Picard said that shit. So I'm saying there are degrees and there are nuggets. But what I am definitely... But to the critique thing, it means don't lose your fucking mind about Squid Game. It's not going to do anything.
Right.
I think the criticisms can help. Mm-hmm. Like I said, let's demonize Elon Musk. But eventually, I will say this, eventually it does all become just a meme.
Yeah. Because
he's still got money for his fucking tunnels in the bipartisan infrastructure bill. So, he got that. He can tell you with his fucking weirdo haircut to not pass the Build Back Better bill because I don't want them subsidies. Because he's already got them.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying...
There are seeds that are there that can help lead to revolutionary thought if you're watching and paying attention.
Yeah, like I had someone say, I just started Animaniacs, and supposedly there is a part where there's a song that talks about the different countries we invaded or helped turn over with regimes and shit. And it's like,
yeah,
that's helpful.
Yeah.
It's not the end. And I think that's what, maybe that's what I'm saying. Like, media is, I think, very helpful. Can help get people to a place to make them receptive.
To start doing their own research, to start looking into the concepts that are brought up, even if they are not, you know, fully.
But I do agree
that any
media that we would want that would show the alternative that we think would be dangerous absolutely would not be made. And it was, I do agree with that part. That the one where we go, not only was this ethically produced, but I have no caveats. Damn, you hit it 100. That's not going to happen. There is always going to be a little cyanide in that cake.
Yeah.
But the least amount of cyanide I'm going to take and I'm going to amplify and I'm going to showcase. This was awesome.
Yeah.
So everybody should watch Star Trek. You should watch. I mean, DS9 is required reading. Go on.
I can see that. I can see that completely, what you're saying. and, you know, like the utopia of being able to have like my truly, you know, leftist, possibly communist, who knows, you know, thought portrayed on screen showing the inefficiency of the capitalist way. Yeah, that's not going to happen. And won't be part of popular media. But you're right. There are ways to insinuate.
Yeah, I think there's glimpses of those, it.
Yeah.
I just finished Station 11. And, you know, it's a post...
Wait, is that the... what is Station 11?
It's a post-pandemic weirdo artsy-fartsy show on HBO. Okay. I'll get into that later. We should do a thing.
Okay.
But there is a part where I don't see a lot of people exchanging money for goods.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more communal and collective survival
mm-hmm.
on a long-term sustainable basis.
Okay.
And so that's there. Now, they don't go like, hey, we're commie anarchism, the movie. But there's a part of it in there. And let me tell you, this show is not perfect. There's a part of it in there that people can see. And a lot of times it takes those visual representations. And look, another reason why, while I am trying to read history and theory and bone up and understand those things and come to the terms of what and learn as much as possible, I still consume popular media, popcorn level popular media, because I think that's a useful tool to relate to people. Like, hey.
Agreed.
You remember when that thing in the movie, you remember when Patton Picard said we don't use money? Like, wouldn't it be awesome if that's what we did?
Right.
And then having, because I'm going to tell you something, especially being an artist and doing commissions and trying to drag what people want, they are not very visual in their minds.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it takes that example of like, hey, remember in A Bug's Life when the crickets were like, we can't let them get 1 inch or else they won't continue to prop us up.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be awesome if that's how we treated the ruling class? Like, so this is all fucking helpful. And having those examples, like, there is a benefit. It is a tool. Now,
there is a connection with the media that we all consume, where if there is one piece of thing that we can point to show our leftist thought, that it exists and it's there and it can be used even if it's not perfect.
Because I was talking to some motherfuckers who are like, oh, I don't watch Marvel. I don't watch any movies because I just know everything that's going to happen. And there's only 7 plot lines and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, well, you sound like a dickhead.
Like, we literally know that and we still watch everything.
Yeah, like, shut up. So, like, okay, great. Go live out in the woods then and, like, not know how. Again, that's going to be a lonely revolution.
Because
this is what people consume and you got to relate to regular people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very, we just need to be careful that, again, we don't go, that's the end. We did it.
Yeah.
We put out Squid Game, y'all. Capitalism's going down. Wait for season 2. And I think I think people just get too excited. And I think what I'm trying to do is just trying to temper that a little bit. Because it was very similar to when we were in the Christian levels, the Christian sphere. And they're like, the Matrix is about demonic oppression. And like, people are
like, and all along it was about coming out and
trans. Gay community. Oh, so I'll hit that real quick. So I watched Resurrections.
Oh, yeah. I did, too.
I thought it was very much up its own butthole. the most self-referential thing I've ever seen in my life.
100% agreed. Self-referential.
Trying so hard to hedge its bets on a meta level.
I literally think that the movie is about, you know, somebody said this. And I don't remember who, like, if I read this somewhere, if it was a comment or whatever, but they were just like, yeah, is it Wachowski, right? Am I saying that right?
I've heard it's Wachowski and Wachowski.
Wachowski, okay. So let's say
I've heard
the Wachowski sisters were told we're going to do The Matrix with or without you. So they were just like, okay, with us. And now we're going to roast you in the making of our of this fucking movie that we did not want to do, but you were going to do and fuck up, so we're going to continue our allegory.
I don't think this is a movie we're going to cover, so I can point some of them to someone else's we're essay. Not cover. But yeah. There's a YouTube channel I follow called Renegade Cut, and to be fair, he did a really good video essay of Resurrections, and he thought it was a very beautiful coming to terms with your own transness type story.
Oh.
He had a really good take on it. Okay. Of like, if the Matrix trilogy was about becoming accepting, then Resurrection is about existing within that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was I liked his perspective a lot. Like, okay. I want it to be true even if mine perspective's more accurate. So yeah, that was very good.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm gonna check that out. Renegade Cut, you say?
Yes, that's the channel. Okay,
I'll link to the actual video and the show notes.
And I want a quick hit on Don't Look Up, because I did post a lot in the Facebook, like, oh, this is coming out, this is coming out, this is coming out. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited, because this part of the story was by David Sirota, who was like on Bernie's team, and he's also a journalist. He's got his own Substack called The Daily Poster. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of good work in journalism and exposing stuff. I think at one point he was working at The Intercept, I'm not sure. But come to find out, by the way, him and Adam McKay had a conversation where, wouldn't it be cool if this happened? And then Adam McKay went and made a movie about it. And that's why he got a story credit. So he didn't write it.
Yeah.
I think there's part of me that's, I think it was a lot more, aren't the Red Hats shitty? Liberal, yeah. Mm-hmm, comedy. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I have also heard some climate scientists say that they are glad that the movie exists.
Hmm.
I think the biggest flaw in the metaphor is that we didn't do anything to make the asteroid hit us. And that's right. Not what's happened. Climate change is not an outside thing.
Yeah.
And so I think that, to me, is the first part where it starts to fall.
Mm-hmm.
And
then, like, the biggest comparison is the response in mm-hmm. the, you know, by the higher-ups in the movie. And people compare that to the COVID response.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
Oh, this movie was made before COVID, and there were some COVID... It wasn't made before COVID, but it was made... Whatever, go on.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so like the biggest comparison was the COVID response, as mm-hmm. opposed to the... Like, most of the things I read didn't talk as much about the climate aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the concept of this being an allegory for climate, you know, destruction that we have done. But mm-hmm. yeah, like, you're right. That we definitely brought that... Well, we... I say we... But yeah. What I mean is oil companies definitely brought that upon us.
Capitalism. Capitalism brought this on us. So, So I think it's a very liberal, it's a blue MAGA movie.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Which is funny, because they never named the party that Meryl Streep is the head of.
Yeah.
You just have to sort of put it together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why are you being a pussy? Like, you're going to make this movie. Everyone's in a red hat. They're denying science. Like, just, like, why would you even... Like, was that a studio note?
Yeah.
Would the legal team not let you get away with that?
Like, Elon Musk didn't want them to talk bad about Republicans.
Well, now, again, talk about how media can be somewhat beneficial. There's references we can make from that about the public-private partnership going mm-hmm. to shit.
Mm-hmm.
But how it works. So, again, I don't think... This is why I think... While I think it is blue MAGA, mm-hmm. I think there's some useful things from Don't Look Up you could use in a conversation.
Mm.
Angel does not agree.
I mean, like, it's not that I don't agree. It's just, like... I think that there's more you can take away from it that would detract from what you could use.
Okay.
So, you know, opinions.
Yeah. So Don't Look Up. I'm trying to do stuff, like, think of stuff. I just started Peacemaker tonight. We'll see how that goes.
Is that so? It's not done, right?
No, I'll let you know.
Okay, thanks.
Station 11 was a suggestion by someone in the Facebook group.
So I do want to watch the, what's the neighbor one? The Therapist Next Door?
Oh, yes. That's what me and... Oh, God damn it. That's a date night show, so I'm not... It's already out, all of it, but I haven't watched
okay.
it.
Okay. Okay. Good. I do want to watch that. I think the review from our Facebook page, which is also called In Front of the Telly, but the review of that literally makes me want to watch it because what she said is about this is I agree with her assessment, even though I haven't watched it, just because I understand how you like Paul Rudd, right?
Paul Rudd and Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell, right? And Will Ferrell to me is only good in drama. Like I don't, except for that.
Wow,
that
online Step Brothers. Step Brothers.
If there wasn't, is it John C. Reilly that's in that?
You don't like
he
him?
Makes it.
Go on. I'm
the
sorry.
Only reason
I derailed you.
Will Ferrell is funny in Step Brothers is because of John C. Reilly.
Okay.
So, playing off of that character. Anyway. So also he's funny in the one in the online. Funny or Die, where the landlord is the baby.
Yeah, the little girl.
Yeah.
That was like their first video.
So he was funny in that.
But it was the baby who made it, I guess.
It was the baby. Yes. Go Will on. Ferrell in dramas, amazing.
Angel hates Elf. She just hates it.
The only thing that I like about Elf is when he gets excited about Santa. Like, I hate him, like, fucking sitting on the other elf's lap, and he's, like, this huge... Like, that's not funny to me. It's just, like, that's annoying. Anyway, but, like, when he just, like, gets excited about Santa,
Who played his dad? He was the best
part. He was the best thing about that.
I don't really like Elf that much either. I think it's overrated as a motherfucker. But, Newhart.
Bob Newhart, yeah. I said Newman, but watching, like, that's not right.
Bob Newhart to me is one of the greatest straight men of all time. Like, if someone's so going good. Crazy and he's giving me a judgmental look to the camera, right? Like, he's the proto Jim from The Office, and he's the best.
He's the best. loved him in pretty much everything he did. Because I watched, there was a show he did called Newhart.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did another show
where he was a comic artist in the second show.
So it was the Bob Newhart show, and then there was Newhart.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a psychologist in the first, and then he was an innkeeper in the second. I watched both of those shows.
There was one where he was a comic artist.
Yeah, he probably was a comic book artist and something, but not these two shows.
I got you.
So the end of Newhart was him waking up from the Newhart as a dream, and he was the Bob Newhart show. So, like, that was the last. It was just, like, brilliant. I loved Newhart.
That's ahead of its time.
It was, yeah. I mean,
That's probably before Dallas.
It was in the 90s, so.
Oh, no.
I mean, the 80s, I'm sorry.
Nope, fuck him. What a hack. Bullshit.
So anyway, yeah. So yeah, you're right. Newhart is like the greatest
Bob.
Straight man, huh?
Bob is the show. It only lasted a season.
Oh, okay.
Bob is the show.
Okay.
Real big. You know, real creative name. It took him a while. He did the Bob Newhart show.
Then Newhart,
and then Bob. They're like, well, fuck, we've done the Bob Newhart show. We just did Newhart. What are we going to call this show, Bob?
Be new.
I rabbit trailed us so fucking hard. Will Ferrell. Yeah. This started
about?
With Will Ferrell.
Oh, yeah, the Therapist Next Door. So
Therapist Next Door, yes.
Bob Newhart. I mean...
Paul Rudd. Will Ferrell's only good in dramas.
Will Ferrell's only good in dramas. To me, he's the best in dramas. Not only good, because I feel like I didn't watch the one where he's a race car driver.
Oh, Talladega.
Because I literally don't like him in comedies.
It's also just like...
Wait, he was in Old School, though.
Yep, Frank the Tank.
But very little. He
was very sparse.
Yeah, and he was hilarious in that.
I think that was like the first time he was in a movie, but he wasn't... He was the surprise guest.
Yeah.
He wasn't... That's when he started doing, like, you know... Yeah, it's like probably the first time.
But, like, that movie where he was the writer? Or was he the writer? Yes. Oh, my God. It was so good.
I remember the movie. I watched it. I meant to. It's like Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, like, everything the writer was doing was happening to him or something. Yeah. That was so good. And it was the first time where I, like, watched something. I watched it because of the other actor. Who was... What was her name?
McCarthy? Was that Sarah McCarthy?
I don't think so.
Oh, Helen Mirren? Glenn Close?
Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson. Yes. I remember her now. I remember her being in it now. Yes. I saw the trailer. That's why I knew, like, oh, yeah, I want to watch that. And I just never got around to it.
So, like, So Emma Thompson was what made me watch it. And the concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Will Ferrell was good in it to me. Like, I was like, oh, I actually like Will Ferrell in this. And so, yeah, that just kind of clued me in that I'm pretty much going to like Will Ferrell in anything where he is not the comedic relief, but he is in the dramatic role. Even if there's some slight comedy. So Paul Rudd is very likable.
Oh, always.
And so it would be and so like I knew that she was right. It's interesting to see him be unhinged, you know, like the role that he plays in this, you know, show.
By the way, for my own purposes, I have not finished it, and I do not remember what the true story was. So just don't touch on that.
I didn't watch it. I haven't watched it yet.
I know, but maybe you've heard the...
Oh, no, I haven't heard anything. And so I don't remember. I don't know anything more than what was posted in our group. So, but everything that was posted is something that I truly believe about these actors and makes me want to watch it. So,
yeah, no, that's why it's a date night show. Then we forgot to watch it last date night. We started... Oh, my God. The current date night shows are Book of Boba Fett.
Okay.
Which I think is...
Is it good?
So, no, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I could see it's doing so much that I could see how people will like it. But for me, it just does a couple of things so dumb and uncreative that I think it's stupid.
Okay.
It's so, like, Dances with Wolves and The Sopranos, but in Star Wars.
So I won't know what that means until I watch it, but we can wait.
I can explain it if you want.
Nope.
Okay. But, like, he fights a biker gang, a speed biker gang, an angel. Angel. These aliens who've never seen Earth. They're literally wearing black leather vests with weird patches on them. Why are they wearing... Why do I need that as a visual signifier? You could literally just have him walk into the bar. I'm already at a bar. Right? You could have him walk into a bar. They're bullying people. Have him beat the shit out of them. And I go, oh, that's a biker gang. Mm-hmm. But these motherfuckers might as well have just had fucking Sons of Anarchy written on the back of their shirts. Then... He interacts with these street kids who look like they walked off out of Cyberpunk, the video game. Mm-hmm. They're all on their own speed bikes that are like all different colors, like they're fucking Power Rangers. It's just bad. I just feel like they're giving me these little signifiers because I couldn't be able to understand it without them. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I'm not sure. they're trying to do this indigenous story thing that I'm not sure. I feel like still, even though the actor, the main actor, is not white, mm-hmm. he's like New Zealand indigenous. Mm-hmm. I still feel like they're doing a little white knighting thing. Mm-hmm. Like Dances with Wolves. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so dumb. I think the show's dumb. And okay. I was really excited because I really do like The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. I am also good.
I like oh shoot, what's her name?
Yeah, May.
May. Yeah, I was like Melinda May. Yeah, so I like that actress, and so I want it to be successful. Because I just want everything she does to be.
Yeah. I know if people walk away and they go like, well, I really like Book of Boba. I think it's fun filling out blah, blah, blah. I would understand. I wouldn't really go hard on them. But for mm-hmm. me, it's just so dumb. Now, I will say this while we're talking about design and shit. Mm-hmm. there's a good and a bad. They put the coolest looking fucking Wookiee I've ever seen in my goddamn life.
Okay.
The motherfucker's got black hair with streaks of gray, braided hair around the head, and fucking spikes on his goddamn shoulder pads. He looks fucking awesome. Nice. You want to know what his goddamn name is?
No.
Chrysanthem.
Chrysanthem?
Yes, like the fucking, like in my...
Chrysanthemum?
Yeah, it's, you just cut off that last syllable. He's a, named after a fucking Christmas flower. I'm gonna kick your ass, Chrysanthem. But he is fucking cool as shit, and he's already off the show. He's like just a mild character, but...
Aww.
And then we're also watching The Shrink Next Door, but the other show that came back I thought was done is Star Trek Prodigy, which is the Nickelodeon Star Trek show.
I thought that... Oh, so the first season is done?
It is not done. I thought it was. It had four episodes came out and then just like stopped and then they're back.
Oh, okay.
It's way... You know what? It's way better than I thought it was going to be. I was so scared. You watch... Like, you actually do watch kid shows. I don't.
Right.
But like... And that's what this is. I think it's really good. And if I was within... easy traveling distance with my nephews, I'd totally be watching with them. And it is I think it's a very good springboard to go, oh, did you like that part? Well, let's watch this episode of TNG because it has that thing in it. It's got completely new characters and new things that are very kinetic and bright for kids. And then it has so many callbacks and Easter eggs. In fact, the last episode I watched, they had old crew members come on. And I think what really ties it together is on the ship, there is a AI tutorial hologram of Janeway. And what's her face? Catherine, whatever her name is, does the voice, of course. And so it's really good.
Oh, the woman who played Janeway.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm blanking on her fucking name.
I know, right? It should be right there. Cause it's my shit. Catherine Janeway is the... The character Kate Mulgrew is the actor.
So yeah, Star Trek Prodigy. I know it's a kid's show. Don't skip it. Don't skip it. There are parts where like you groan a little bit because it's a kid's show, but there's still a lot of good parts to it. So don't skip it. I would definitely suggest Star Trek Prodigy. And then we're watching Discovery, but it's in the middle of a season break, so.
I'm glad you told me that because I thought that it was done. Mm-mm. So I was like, ooh, I can watch Prodigy because I thought that was done. And I can watch Discovery and do that. And I cannot.
No, but Station 11, I just watched the last episode tonight. So it's finished this week. You can go and watch that.
Okay.
If you're interested. I think I had some problems with it, but overall I found it interesting.
Okay.
I think that's all I got for, hey, let's come back. Or where what I've been up to.
Okay. I've watched a bunch of different stuff, but I did not. There, it's kind of like, you know, what's your favorite show? And like suddenly I don't even know what TV is. So yeah, that's how I feel about what I did over our break.
You watch so much more show. Like, I really do. Like, I watch a lot of YouTube. So like when I'm when I break off to actually watch a scripted narrative, mm-hmm. then it's like a big deal. So it's a lot easier for me to catalog what I'm watching.
Right.
Whereas you're the opposite.
Where I'm just watching TV.
Yeah, if you watch a YouTube video, it's easy to remember.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Okay, so politics aside,
yeah,
you should watch Dope Sick.
You should watch Dope Sick.
Can you believe that? Like, we had like a full probably hour of talking about everything else besides Dope Sick, and Dope Sick is what got us into all of that conversation.
You're definitely getting the abridged version.
Yeah,
and trust me, you want that.
Definitely 100%. So, you know, what do you have on your countdown?
Let's see. In 6 hours, I have Afterlife, Season 3, the Netflix show with Ricky Gervais.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like Ricky Gervais and you think he's gross, I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. I think Afterlife, though, is his attempt at being sweet, and I think it's a fun show.
Is it funny?
At times.
Okay.
Is
it mainly depressing?
No, but I mean, like, the characters are depressed, and it's about finding hope through that, so it can be. I don't want to oversell it, is what I'm trying to do. It's, like, not like the usual Ricky Gervais joint. Mm-hmm. I guess it is a regular Ricky Gervais joint. It's, like, the guy who came up with The Office is about quiet people and the interesting things that happen, and they're usually... what most mundane. People would consider, mundane lives. Mm-hmm. And so
that's all Ricky Gervais.
Yeah. So it's finding life after someone close, after his wife dies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that's 2 days. I'm not gonna know. 7 in a week, we got Ozark Season 4. Have you watched Ozark yet?
No.
Why?
Because I wasn't ready to watch real life shows that are dramas that where people get hurt. I just want to watch.
Yeah, you were late to Breaking Bad
over
too.
And over and over again. I mean, you know, it's just like it truly did not have the spell slots to handle real life things going on, even though they're made up things overall. So, wow. You know. I'm ready to get into Ozark. It's like it's over, right? Like they did the series finale, right?
First off, I thought season 3 was the final season, but this is
season four. Yeah.
So I don't know. I evidently don't have enough information to say that definitively. So
okay.
Yeah, you were also late to the Breaking Bad train too.
I was for sure. Because
they kept winning Emmys, and I was like, "You're not watching this." To be fair, I wasn't there episode one, but I was there before you, and it, like, kept winning Emmys. And we were working at Sage at the time, and you were like, "Or we were, whatever." And you said, "Is it really good?" I was like, "Yeah, it's pretty. It's really good." And that was a dumb story. Anyway, my point is, you were late. This is very much in Breaking Bad house.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen people talking about it and wanting to...
There are no good guys.
Yeah. But is there a... What was the name of the guy that worked with I Am the One Who Knocks?
Oh, is there a Jesse Pinkman?
Aaron Paul.
Is there an Aaron Paul?
Pinkman?
I would say, oh gosh, the wife is that, but...
Okay, well, I mean, you know, I'm going to watch it. It's just that there was a stretch of time where I couldn't handle certain types of shows.
You're not gonna take it. That's fine.
I'm moving past that now. I'm getting to the point where I can watch some of these things that I have eschewed because of. You know, like, I only have 2 spell slots, and it was being taken up by everything else, you know? So, I'm a warlock in this scenario.
In 7 days, Servant comes back for season 3. The M. Night Shyamalan show, that's very weird. In 10 days, yeah, Snowpiercer. I have tried to start the show.
Over and over. Wait, didn't we have somebody on the...
Yeah, there was a weird conversation in the group, and people couldn't keep up with the fact that they couldn't keep up with... In the conversation, not everyone knew that there was a show and a movie.
Okay.
Which, to be fair, I heard the movie was... The show was coming out, and I was like, how do you make that into... How do you extend that story? So, I have tried twice to watch the show. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it one more time. I mean, like, I can't make it 15 minutes. I'm going to give it one more shot. I've done that with other shows before, and then I ended up liking them. So it doesn't mean you just, you know, talking about you being in a certain headspace, sometimes mm-hmm. you start something, you're just not there.
Yeah.
So it's still on my list because I'm gonna try. That's 10 days. 10 days, American Dad comes back. 12 day, yeah, that's it. That's one for my 14.
Okay. So for me, I have in 17 hours, The Secrets of Sulphur Spring. Of course, it's a fucking Disney Channel show. Mm. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to try to watch it anyway. But this is season two, so I haven't watched any of it. But I'm going to try to watch that. In 4 days, How I Met Your Father starts on Hulu. Obs, I'm going to watch it after the first season has completed. But just so you know, in 4 days, it's coming out.
That trailer looks so bad.
Sure. But, like, was the first one, did the first one look any better? If yes. It wasn't for, like, Allison Hannigan, I probably wouldn't have watched it because I didn't really know Jason...
Siegel.
I didn't know... I mean, obviously, I knew Doogie Howser.
We need to do a thing, for the ones we lost because Bob Saget.
Oh, yes. We'll do that. We'll do that next episode. But anyway, so How I Met Your Father, I'm going to try it out just because I did like How I Met Your Mother.
Mm-hmm.
That's in 4 days. In 6 days, Looney Tunes Cartoon Season 4 on HBO Max. I added Ozark to the list because Season 4 comes out. But, like, this is the final season, so I may watch the first 3 seasons and then catch up with 4 once it's complete. Or I may just wait until 4 is done and then marathon the entire show. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I am going to watch it.
It's Netflix, so it's all dropping.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah. Then I may can... I forget that Netflix does that when most other streamers don't. I also have Servant on the list, but I haven't watched a single episode of it. Like, there's a bunch of Apple TV shows that I really want to watch, but I just haven't gotten to it because I can't watch it in my bedroom
mm-hmm.
because I have a PC in my bedroom so I can play video games, and all of my Apple stuff is outside of the bedroom.
Word.
In 10 days, The Responder. It's a BBC One show, so I don't know how I'm going to be able to watch it, but it has what's his face? Martin Freeman in it as mm-hmm. the lead, it looks like, and I pretty much love anything with Martin Freeman. So I'm going to check it out.
Yep.
As soon as I can. In 10 days, Snowpiercer. Still haven't watched a single episode of it, so whatever. In 12 days, Resident Alien Season 2. I finally watched the first season of it, and it was weird, and I wasn't 100% sure that I liked Alan Tudyk in the role, but I did kind of walk away from it liking the show, so... I'm interested to see what they do in season 2. In 14 days, I have All of Us is Dead on Netflix, which is about zombies. Like, am I ready to see, like, a show about zombies? I'm not sure yet, but, you know, maybe I'll give it a try.
What's the name of the show?
All of Us Are Dead.
Oh. I put is dead. I haven't seen you.
All of Us is Dead.
Oh, okay.
Is dead. No, All of Us Are Dead. Okay, and 14 days, The After Party, which is on Disney Plus, is a murder mystery comedy set at a high school reunion after party. There's 8 episodes retelling the same night through a different character's perspective, each with their own unique visual format and film genre to match the teller's personality. Tiffany Haddish is in this. Ben Schwartz is in this. Ilana Glazer is in this. Ike Barinholtz is in this. These are, like, funny fucking people to me, so like I'm pretty interested in what's gonna happen with that. In 14 days, Feria on Netflix. It's 1990s Andalusia. Two sisters face rejection and search for the truth when their missing parents are accused of killing 23 people in a cult ritual. Like, what is more exciting than murder? last in 14 days, Getting Curious with Jonathan Van Ness. And I don't know what it's going to be about, but like, I like Jonathan Van Ness. I think he's hilarious and fun. I wish that there were more Gay of Thrones, but unfortunately there isn't. But I think Jonathan Van Ness is an interesting actor and personality, and I'm, you know, pretty excited to see what he's up to.
Stephanie has been watching a lot of Queer Eye lately.
Yeah, I pretty much watched all the Queer Eye, and I want to go back and look at that. Like rewatch that again, because it's just, you know, like sometimes you need to cry and you don't know how to do it on your own, so you just watch Queer Eye so they can manufacture that emotion for you. And so like, I like it. It works for me.
When before I culled a lot of my YouTube and I was watching too much YouTube, I would watch these little shorts that the Indian guy would do. Or is he Indian? The
who?
I don't remember his name. He's got a white pompadour. He loves the French tuck. He does the clothes.
Oh, Tan.
Tan, yes. He would do these little shorts where he would do this for comedians. And it was just, let me take John Mulhaney shopping. And that was the thing. Like, so it's a little short. And so I liked, after watching a couple of those, I got to like him. But
yeah,
never taken the time to watch any Queer Eye.
Oh, okay.
I heard the Netflix version was a little more derivative of the first one, or is that just because everyone liked the first people so much?
I think it's a combination of liking the first people and feeling like the current show is too manufactured after watching the first one. And so like, and then in the first one it was all straight guys that these queer guys were making over.
Well, yeah.
Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Well, yeah.
Was the original name. And so I think that there was a novelty to that, because you're just taking these men that have no understanding of anything fashion and, you know, like whatever, right?
It was also on network television.
Yeah, exactly. And so in this one, you know, like it just feels like, like, I think people feel like it's more manufactured. That's it. You know, it's like, these aren't real tears or concepts or, you know, like, what's happening with these people. Like, we just found someone that we could easily market, or who has a product that we could, you know, do something with, or who, you know, whatever. Like, it almost feels like fake people, even though they're real people, you know?
Yeah. So, it's hard because it's hard because the reality show has been so fucked with. I mean, even from the get-go, the real world wasn't real. The producers were starting shit all the time, and then
that's but why, we weren't as savvy. We as a viewer weren't as savvy to the machinations of reality TV.
Well, now we probably
can hear the hand quotes.
We've probably overcorrected to a more cynical view that they think they think the Queer Eye is all bullshit.
Yeah, but I like it because like they're, you know, talking about people and things that you don't really see that often, you know.
And this one isn't all.
Go ahead.
No, I did that too early.
I was just gonna say working with trans people or people who've never interacted with gay people and, you know, things like that, where, you know, like they're learning along with, you know, even the actors, you know, that are the Queer Eye, you know, like even they are learning something from, you know, whatever they're doing, you know, like stories that almost resonate because you remembered that for yourself. So like there was an episode where one of the guys has to interact with somebody in the church and, you know, like after being traumatized by the church, you know, coming to, you know, he also coming to some form of realization because of his interaction with this pastor, you know, was helpful, helped him. And it was a little bit cathartic for, you know, some of us who have also been traumatized by the church. So, I mean, I think that there's like, you know, positives of it, you know, if you go into it thinking that it's true accounting of interactions, then you are a fool. But if you don't find something that resonates with you, then maybe you're a bit too cynical.
Yeah.
But I get it if you didn't. I also get it if you didn't like it from jump.
There are a lot of shows that are bullshit. A lot of those housing shows that where they flip shit, that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Or at least the ones where they're buying, picking at which house they're going to buy. Like, they've usually already bought the fucking house, and the house they bought is not even one of the three House Hunters. Yeah. We found out that was bullshit.
Yeah.
And so if these shows, which very quickly get more than one season, you can find fucking stories online about whether they're real or not. Like, I found out, you know, I like Gordon Ramsay, even though I haven't watched, I haven't even watched his shows in a while. I like Gordon Ramsay. I found out during Hell's Kitchen, he actually pays the contestants, because these are people who work in the service industry. They can't really take time off to go be in a fucking show.
Right.
But he actually pays them a wage. That's not normal.
Right.
I also found out that Catfish is another, which is another one of the shows. There's a small list of these fucking shows I watch. Catfish is one of them. I found out that the producers do a lot of the investigation work first. And then they have, I can't even remember the guy's name anymore. It's been so long since I watched. Then they have they don't give the investigation results to the host, but they have to, like, they can't invest in the story if it's not going to be a payoff, basically.
Right, right.
So, like, and I think that's where the misguided cynicism, overcorrective cynicism happens, is they don't, no one really takes the time to go, like, people just forget that there's a cameraman and crew on the side of the screen, like behind the screen that you're watching. And that is going to have an effect on whatever the happening.
Right. I mean, like, we get this, this is the nature video, like, you, observing, it's the science fact, observing it changes the results.
Yes.
So, you know, like, no matter what, you're changing the results, like, whatever could have been endearing or you know, whatever about it gets changed because there is a cameraman and a camera right there.
Yeah, like, there's this YouTube video that I watched a reaction video of where this dipshit millionaire is like, I'm going to be homeless for a year and then have $1 million company at the end of it. And so he goes homeless with a camera crew following him the entire fucking time. There's a shit more problems with this video. Spoiler alert, he fucking fails, by the way. And then secondly,
he didn't make it the whole year being homeless.
Not only did he make it, he just accidentally proved, because this is a libertarian dipshit, he accidentally proved that it's all luck that gets you to where you need to be. But whatever. The point is, even if you're quote-unquote homeless, but you have a camera crew following you, that's going to affect the situation. You're not documenting shit.
Yeah.
So I think people get a little too cynical, but you can easily find, and I think it's fun to find out these little behind the scenes things.
Yeah.
So if you are a fan of a show, and especially if you're a fan of a show and had someone give you shit about it, because I'm sure for every one of these shows, there's a super fan and there's a someone who fucking hates that it exists. And sometimes those two people know each other. So, like, go do a little bit
sometimes
of research.
Sometimes it's us.
Yes. This, again, a very small list of these shows I'll watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that can give you, first off, you can find out, like, am I watching bullshit? And maybe you are and you don't care. I mean, like, it's not like the Ozarks are real. Yeah. Jason Bateman's not actually laundering money for the cartels. So it's like, whatever. It's like, you know, if there's some, if you find out there's kayfabe, I think it's better to know than not know. But
yeah,
if you find out that it's a little kayfabe, then, like, whatever. But
So, I mean, you know, I watched Don't Look Up, and then it was just like, okay, that was fucking depressing. Let me watch some Queer Eye. I need that manufactured, I'm gonna cry about this because I'm so happy that people are getting what they deserve or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, do they deserve it? I don't know. I don't care. I think that they tell the story in a way that makes me think, yeah, they deserve it. So,
you know, I think whatever. The blowback, I think there is also, you know, for everything, there's like a response. I think the response to all this cynicism is the positive game show aspect of the British baking show, where everyone's just fucking mm-hmm. nice and super awesome to each other. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought I would hate that because I'm like, that's too schmaltzy. I end up liking it, but that's probably so because I've seen so much Hell's Kitchen where yeah. people are shitting on each other.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like when you are used to the tactics that TV shows take to manufacture the emotion that they want you to have. You know, like, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about This Is Us and how you're fucking crying mm-hmm. pretty much every episode, right? And then, you know, like, I think about a show like, which I know you don't like this, but I think about a show like Ted Lasso, mm-hmm. where it feels like the characters are so true to what we see that the emotion that they compel is not manufactured, even though it 100% is.
The relatability.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's just nice to, like, see that contrast. And just because it's manufactured doesn't mean that it's not something that you do or don't want, you know? So I'm not judging it right now. I'm just saying that, you know, like, maybe I see it, but I still want it.
I was listening to a conversation that talked about generational politics a little bit, and I think overall they're sort of stupid, but they were talking about something that I really resonated with, about how there's like this, there was this part of the Gen X mentality, which I'm not Gen X, but I'm on the cusp, so I got some mm-hmm. attributes, where authenticity was something that was put, that had a super high value. Mm-hmm. And so In the conversation, it did a really good job, and I'm not going to replicate how well it did, so I'm just going to tell you about how a little bit, some of that's a little bit of bullshit and distracting mm-hmm. from the point of certain things. Right. Sort of like, you know, the punk rock, like, are you a true punk rocker? You a punk rocker or a poser? Like, who gives a shit?
Right.
Why is this a conversation? Why is this a reason to beat someone up? Like, it can be taken too far, that authenticity, that craving for authenticity. So I can't help go find out if your show's bullshit or not.
Right.
So at least you know.
Right.
But, you know, it doesn't matter. Because, yeah. like we said, who gives a shit? Like, unless yeah. this person, unless it's a doctor giving you advice and you take it, and it's bad advice, unless you're watching yeah. Dr. Oz or Dr. Phil and actually taking away from something that they're saying that could end up being harmful, it doesn't fucking matter.
Right.
So, but anyway. And I'm working to make it matter less.
mm-hmm.
So yeah. I get it.
Right. I mean, it's just like, just because we know what our TV is trying to convey to us doesn't mean that we also don't get to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So where can the people find you, Jacob?
If you like anything that I said or talked about tonight, you might think, I like the cut of that guy's jib. I bet he draws good cartoons. Well, you can check them out for yourself by going to my website, 71stickerco.etsy.com. That's the right way I'm supposed to plug it. And you might find some stickers of some cartoon stickers of some characters that we talked about tonight. In fact, I'm working on a Peacemaker set, and I'm also working on an Office set right now. So, and I just up, you know, we didn't talk about this at all, Spider-Man. I just put up a Tobey Maguire Spider-Man set.
Cool.
Up. I'm pretty proud of my Doc Ock. Yeah, you can check those out there. And you can follow us if you want to see how to use these stickers or some fun political and nerd memes. You can follow me on Instagram at 71stickerco. We're also on Facebook. If you want to see time-lapse videos of the drawings, you can go to TikTok at 71stickerco. And by the way, to make sure it gets plugged. Again, whenever we're offline, at any time during the day, you want to give us a suggestion of a show to watch, or just start a conversation, or you have a certain analysis, political analysis of a show, you can always start the conversation at our Facebook group In Front of the Telly.
And you can find me on the interwebs at In Front of the Telly. Yeah. So simple.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might not be able to find me, but I'm going to try to be there. Well, anyway, that's our show. Thanks for listening.
And remember,
we'll be watching.